Hey, welcome to the class on preparation. Do you feel prepared to teach school this year? So, quiz question to get us started. Which animal do you think can swim, elephant or a hippo? Do you think an elephant can swim? Raise your hand. Do you think a hippo can swim? Raise your hand. That would seem to be the more logical choice. But interestingly enough, I found out that the hippo can't swim. An elephant can swim. At least that's what the internet says, so it must be true. They can float. Hippos can float. But their bodies are actually denser than most mammals. So when they allow themselves to sink, then they're stuck. They have to just simply walk on the bottom or run or gallop on the bottom until they get out to be able to get out. Elephants, on the other hand, are excellent swimmers. Can swim from birth, I believe. Now, you would never jump into a lake if you had never swum before. You would first learn how to swim. My wife didn't know how to swim when we first got married, and that was one thing that was very important to me for her to learn how to swim, because it's an important skill. Teaching is also a skill that must be learned. And ideally, a teacher should apprentice underneath an experienced teacher before diving in for the first time. But unfortunately, probably most of you didn't have that opportunity, and maybe you feel like you're being pushed off the deep end of the pool. We're here to help keep you from drowning, hopefully. We'll do what we can to help you in this plunge. The importance of preparation. Three most important words to a teacher, to a painter, a pilot, or a chef are preparation, preparation, and preparation. The three most important words to a painter, pilot, or chef. Now, the three most important words to a teacher are preparation, preparation, preparation. You wouldn't want to fly on a plane where the pilot had cheated on his test. Probably not. You wouldn't want to have a brain surgeon operating on your head if he had not gotten ready to do it beforehand. In the same way for a teacher. Teacher is just as important. So why do we prepare? First of all, it saves time. And you might think, well, I don't have time. Maybe you don't have time. There's too many other things. We're too busy putting on decorations on the wall and texting our friends, and we just didn't have time to prepare. Well, it takes a lot of time to prepare, yes, but it takes even more time if you don't prepare. Mm-hmm. If you're confused when you teach a lesson, then your students will definitely be confused when they're learning it. If you don't have time to do it right, then you must have time to do it over again. And it may happen that you have to teach a lesson over again. That happens to all of us. But don't let it be because you didn't prepare. Make sure you prepare because it saves time. Secondly, it promotes a higher standard of teaching. You might have heard the phrase, proper prior planning prevents preposterously poor performance. And that's just the way it is. You may have heard of the brain surgeon Ben Carson. He's famous for his brain surgeries, and especially one time there were two Siamese twins. Not two sets of twins, but there was a set of Siamese twins that were born, and they were joined at the head. They had shared blood vessels, and they were joined at the head, and nowhere else were they joined. And he and his team, they were asked to try to separate these two boys. And the parents were warned that this had never been done before. They were warned this is a dangerous procedure. But these boys would never be able to live a normal life as long as they were joined at the head like this. They would never be able to learn to crawl. They couldn't sit up. Imagine living a life like that stuck to someone else. So the parents were determined to if there's any possible way, can we fix this? And so Ben Carson and his team spent 5 months planning and working through every contingency they could envision. They even worked out where each member of the 70-person team would stand in the operating room on the floor. They had a 10-page book that detailed every step of the process. They had 5 3-hour dress rehearsals where they practiced doing the surgery on life-size dolls attached at the head by Velcro. Why did they prepare so much? What was at stake if they failed this operation? What's at stake if you fail as a teacher? It's much more than just teaching. There are children's lives at stake. Children's futures. The Bible says that if you offend one of these little ones, it's better for you to be drowned in the depths of the sea. So it's extremely important that we take this serious. It is a life-changing experience. And thankfully, though, if you fail one time, you won't. If you don't prepare one time, you won't fail because of that. But if you continue in that process, you're setting yourself up for failure. When you don't prepare, you're sending a message to your students that school is not important, that they are not important. Thirdly, it is a good example for your students. Students will know when you don't know the lesson. They will know if you don't know how to do it well. And if you consistently come to class and you're not ready, yes, they will know that. Now, there are some times when you overslept that morning or something happened. You had a wreck on the way to school. One time I was driving to school and had iced coffee down in the floorboards to take to school. And I was going around one of those Tennessee curves and the iced coffee spilled over. And I reached down to grab it and it got off the road. And next thing you know, I'm sliding into an oncoming truck. Thankfully, neither of us were going very fast. But I wasn't ready for the day that day. And I got to school late as well. They'll understand times like that, but if you come consistently not ready, they will know it. And if you are prepared most of the time, then they'll understand those times and when you aren't. But do not allow it to become a habit of just not preparing. They will know, and they'll be like, "Well, why do you want me to prepare, study for this test if you don't study for your classes or whatever?" Fourthly, it helps prevent burnout. None of us enjoy feeling like a failure, but that's what happens when you don't prepare. You feel like a failure. Preparation is essential in order to be a successful teacher. Preparation is essential for success. And in that surgery where Ben Carson separated the two twins, it was successful. They both, as far as I know, I don't know about now if they're still living today, but they survived the surgery. And it's just amazing. But it was because, and largely due to all the preparation they did ahead of time. And of course, I'm sure God was with them as well. When you fail to prepare, you're preparing to fail. So how do we prepare? I think the most important thing in preparation is to prepare in prayer. I think each day you should begin with prayer for your students. And sometimes what I would do is I would take turn sitting in their desk, go around and sit in each one of their desks, look at their work, and pray for them. And it would help me specifically remember the struggles that each one had. I might be looking through their language arts, and this one here is really bad penmanship, and I could pray that could be better. Maybe this one really struggles with spelling. Maybe this one struggles in math. Pray for that student that they can, and then you could help them as well. Or maybe it's a behavior issue that you're dealing with. Pray for them that they could overcome that and you could help them with that. Do you feel unqualified to teach? Hopefully you do, because you're not qualified. None of us are qualified to do this. Like Berlin said this morning, it's not through our ability, it's God's ability. We have to depend on His strength. In the Seven Laws of the Learner, Bruce Wilkinson says, "Teachers impact more by their character and their commitment than by their communication." It's not about teaching what 10 times 10 is, although that is included. That's not what it's all about. It's about preparing these students for life, preparing them to be a worker in God's kingdom. Teachers impact more by their character and their commitment. How is your character? How is your commitment to teach? do they know that you're just can hardly wait to the end of the school year, or they know that you're committed to doing this? We heard about that this morning as well. It says in 2 Corinthians 12:9-10, and he said unto me, my grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I glory in mine infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, when in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong. When we're at the place in school when we feel totally helpless, when we don't know what to do, that is when God can really, really work and really use us. When we, if we reach out to Him, we pray and ask Him for His help. Never in school when I taught, I was never faced with a problem so big that when I prayed about it, that God didn't provide a solution, didn't provide an idea or provide strength to go through it. He will always provide the strength. And especially when we're weak in our own strength, that's when God can show Himself strong through us. When we try to do it on our own strength, it doesn't work. The students will outsmart you and they'll outlast you every time. We need God's strength to do this. When Jehoshaphat was king, there was a great army that came up against them. And here's what he said in 2 Chronicles 20. O our God, wilt thou not judge them? For we have no might against this great company that cometh against us. Neither know we what to do, but our eyes are upon thee. As we teach school, there's times when you're not going to know what to do. But if your eyes are on Jesus, then he'll give you strength for it. We're not made to always give, 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 give. We must daily refuel our tanks at the feet of Jesus. You can't lead on empty. Make sure you take Jesus into the classroom with you. Teach. Don't try to teach without Jesus. Pray for your students. Pray often. Pray for health for your students and for yourselves. It's hard to find substitutes sometimes. So pray for health. Pray for patience. That's one thing that is required to be a teacher, is you have to have patience. And if you don't have patience, the Lord will work on you on that and help you learn patience. Okay, another way to prepare is to know your expectations. I'd like to read a story from the Seven Laws of the Learner. Won't be making a lot of comments, but just I want you to listen and see if you can get the message here. I stood like a rock in a rushing stream of preoccupied Bible college students. It was fall registration, organized chaos. I had seen it all before many times, but this time, instead of racing around the gym signing up for classes, I watched the students sign up for my classes. It was my first year out of graduate school, and I was just hours away from my debut on the other side of the lectern. Taking a closer look at several of the registration tables, I noticed that I had been assigned sections 1, 2, and 3 of the course called Bible Study Methods. The remaining 5 sections were taught by others. After walking around for 20 minutes, I left the gym and headed across campus toward my office. A well-seasoned faculty member at the college caught up with me and said, I just can't believe it. You can't believe what? They gave you section 2, didn't they? Well, yes, I guess they did. He shook his head in seeming unbelief. I just can't believe it. You're the new faculty member, first year rookie, and they gave you section 2. He had me perplexed. Why? What's so special about section 2? You mean they didn't tell you at faculty orientation? The truth was, I was the only new faculty member that year, so they didn't have a faculty orientation. I asked him to explain it to me. Did you have a faculty orientation? Section 2 is all the top high school seniors coming into the freshman class, the honors group, cream of the crop, the most outstanding group of students in the whole college. We stopped outside the faculty offices and he leveled his gaze at me. Bruce, you're not going to believe the difference in Section 2. What do you mean? I asked, not knowing whether to feel exhilarated or intimidated. Growing up, I had never been in Section 2, I didn't think. Motivation, like a team of wild horses straining at the reins. Those children just pull it out of you. You're going to love every minute of it. Wow, first year teacher, I just can't believe the luck. He walked down the sidewalk, shaking his head. I was intrigued, to say the least. The next day, Section 1 filed in, and we had a good hour. Nothing outstanding, just a good give-and-take session with a solid group of young men and women. After break, Section 2 walked in. I couldn't believe it. He was absolutely right. I could feel the electricity in the air. From the ring of the bell, class just flew by as the teacher and students learned at almost warp speed. It was like stepping on a surfboard and riding the crest of the wave the entire hour. At times, the class's interest and desire to learn swept over me with such intensity that I had trouble staying on top of it. Everything seemed different, their questions, their eye contact, their facial expressions, even the way they sat in their chairs. It was incredible. My colleague was right. These students just pulled the best out of you. Section 3 came in later that day, and I realized in only a few seconds they were just like Section 1. Good, but nowhere near the caliber of Section 2. As the semester progressed, I found myself increasingly grateful to God for leading me into the ministry of teaching. I had never felt so challenged and fulfilled. And though I enjoyed all of my classes, Section 2 always made my day. As we neared midterms, I found myself walking to a faculty meeting with the academic dean, Dr. Joseph Wong. "Well, Bruce," he said, "you're at the halfway point of your first year. The honeymoon is over by now. How do you enjoy teaching college?"
"It's absolutely terrific. It's better than I ever imagined."
He smiled. "That's great to hear. What's your favorite part of teaching?" Without thinking, I blurted out, "Section 2!" He raised his eyebrows and stopped walking in order to listen more intently. I thought, "You have Section 2? Tell me about it." It was the first chance I had to express my delight and gratitude for the opportunity to teach 30 of the keenest students I had ever encountered. I must have sung their praise for a couple minutes as I described the amazing difference between them and the rest of my classes. The dean looked thoughtful as I went on and on about this gifted group of young men and women. When I'd finished, he said, "I'm glad you're having so much success, Bruce, but I need to tell you something that may surprise you. There is no honors class this year. We canceled it." My mouth went dry. "Joe," I said, "you've got to be kidding." "No, I'm not kidding. Last year we decided it would be better if we spread the top students through all the classes. We thought it would add a little more spark to each of the sections." Dizzy with disbelief, I said, "Joe, I'll catch you in a few minutes. I need to go back to my office for a moment." I raced into my office and dialed the register, sure that my colleague was trying to pull something over this rookie.
"Joyce," I said, "I've got Section 2 of the Bible study methods, right?"
"That's right, Bruce."
I swallowed hard.
"And Joyce, Section 2 contains all the outstanding students, the top freshmen, right?"
"Well, no, Bruce. We canceled that program last year."
Groaning inwardly, I thanked her and hung up the phone. I couldn't seem to come to grips with what was happening. With reluctance, I reached for my gradebook and opened it. I compared the grades of Section 1 and 3 with Section 2. The difference was staggering. I pulled a stack of ungraded papers off my bookshelf. Stacking Sections 1 and 3 on top of each other, I compared that pile with the stack from Section 2 by itself. Section 2 had more pages than the other two sections combined. I went through the papers one by one, page by page, and the difference was dramatic. The Section 2 students outshone their peers again and again. That day proved to be one of the most dramatic learning experiences of my life. I've never quite gotten over it. For the first time, I realized that what I believed about my students made an incredible difference in what they learned in my class. You see, there was no real difference between Sections 1, 2, and 3. It was the same content, same day of the week, same pool of 18 and 19-year-old students. Not one difference. In fact, never once did I say, "You're Section 2, and your performance should reflect it." Then how could I explain a dramatic difference between what these students learned? The only difference was in the teacher's expectations. Because my expectations were much higher for Section 2, so was their behavior and learning. I'll never forget sitting back in my chair and saying to myself, "I wonder what would have happened if that faculty member had told me the outstanding students were in Section 3. The fourth thing is in preparing is know your students. I've always had the privilege of knowing my students ahead of time, so I'm not sure what it's like to go to a brand new community. I'll give you a lot of these ideas come from Jonathan Erb. I think he taught in several new communities. And you don't have to do all of these things, but I think you'd benefit by doing some of them for sure. Make sure you know your students. Know their personalities. Know their interests. What do they enjoy doing? And it might not be what they write on that paper on the first day of school when you ask them their hobbies. What you need to do is sit down with them at lunchtime. Make sure that you take time to eat lunch with your students, at least most of the time. And listen to what they talk about. Listen to their conversations. You can learn a lot about them like that. But obviously now, in preparing, we're thinking of before school, find out as much as you can. Study their records. If you go to school, you should be able to find somewhere a file with his achievement test records and grades, things like that. Look at them and look at each student. See if you have students that struggle in math, perhaps. And if they do, maybe do flashcards with them from the very beginning of school. If their grades show they struggle to math, that's something that would be very beneficial. In fact, it's really good to do flashcards with all of your students at the beginning of the year. I tried that one year, just all of them. We did flashcards every morning, and the older ones really enjoyed it. They just love to see if they could beat their record from the previous day. And I think I said once you get to 100 flashcards in a minute, then you don't have to do them anymore. And so they were working toward that goal of getting 100 flashcards. In fact, what they really enjoyed doing was giving me flashcards. And maybe, you know, if this is your first year teaching, you're probably going to need some brush up unless you're a lot smarter than what I was in school. So do the flashcards with your students or speed drills or whatever. They love doing things like that. And then when you reach a certain goal, they can stop. Of course, they need to keep on doing it for the younger grades, but that's being proactive. Be proactive. Don't be reactive. Don't wait until they start failing in math, and then we start doing flashcards and speed drills and things like that. Start from the very beginning, because very likely they are all going to be a bit rusty. No matter how smart they are, they're all going to be a bit rusty in math. Start a relationship with them. This is something you can do here at WFTI. Say, go find some postcards and send your students a postcard. Say, "Hello, Ben, this is Mr. Derek. Just looking forward to teaching school this year. I'm out in Oregon right now, attending Teachers Week. Can't wait to see you or to start school." Send them a postcard. That's really special to them. My daughter, Megan, just got a letter in the mail, and it's her first one that she got. She's 5 years old, and you should have seen the look on her face when she received that, saw the letter with her name on it. That's what it'll do for your students if they get that. It can really mean something to them. They know you care about them. Make a scrapbook. Get a scrapbook and put their picture and their name, birthday, whatever you know about them on that page. Make a scrapbook with a page for each student. Make sure you know their names especially. Students love to hear their name being used in class. Shane, do you like hearing your name in class?
Sure.
And if I say, "You there, can you answer what's 10 plus 10? You know, hopefully you don't have to do that. Make sure you know their names and use them often in school. Find a church calendar if you can. That can be very helpful. The fifth thing is know your school. And again, if this is a school where you grew up in, you probably know how things normally go. But if it's not, find out what your two things you need to know about the school. One is their school culture. Culture simply means what they do and how they do it. What games do they play? Maybe what are the rules for the games? What are the times for assembly, for devotions, for choir? What are the procedures for the assembly times, recess times? What's their procedure for grading their work? Make sure you know that. What is their view of learning, and maybe what areas need encouragement? Work with the culture, though. Please, is it fair to say don't try to change anything the first year? Maybe there is something sometimes that maybe does desperately need to be changed, but be very careful about changing anything. Work with the culture. The first year you're learning, you're getting into it, then the second year and the third year you have much more right to make changes than you do just the first year coming in. Know the school structure. Is it church-sponsored or is it patron-sponsored? Who's the principal? Who's the chairman? Who do you go to when you have questions? Who's the head teacher? Who's responsible for recess and things like that? Make sure you know the structure of the school before you start. Sixthly, know your curriculum. And that was one of my favorite things in walking into a classroom the first time, is I would go and find the book order. So usually somewhere back in a corner or by the door or somewhere, there's the stack of books. And I really enjoy opening up those boxes and getting out all the books. And I would try to have a stack on the table for each student, put their books and textbooks and on each one, whatever they'll need. And do that right away. That should be the first thing you do. That way, if there's something missing, then you can order it and still have time to get it before school starts. Teachers maybe are the ones that keep the next day shipping going. Because of all the things, last minute things they have to order. But find that and organize it. Know what the difference between skill subjects versus content subjects. Skill subjects would be subjects that actually teach you how to do something, like math or English, reading. Content subjects are like science and history that simply teach information. Make sure you know the difference, and make sure you cover the skill subjects well, especially the first year. Study the textbooks. Some curriculums, some textbooks have a spiral approach where the learning happens kind of like this, where we learn something and we come back, we learn it again, we learn something different, and each lesson is we go around, and it's not, maybe not in an orderly fashion, but each time we get a little bit higher, and then we get up here, we're at the top. Whereas other textbooks are more a step or chapter approach, where we learn adjectives, and then we learn adverbs, and then we learn verbs, and then we learn prepositions, and each time we learn something, we keep going up until we get to the top. Either way can be a great method of learning, but just know which method is being used in this curriculum. Make sure you plan time for review. Figure out how much, when you look at the textbook, look at how many pages there are, and figure out how many pages you need to do, or how much you need to do in order to get it done that year. It's better to do that at the beginning of the year than wait till Christmas time and see, we're not even halfway through this, and suddenly have to do a bunch of work to try to catch up. So figure that out ahead of time. Read the teacher's guides. And this is something that's off the resource that's often missed. There's lots and lots of information in here about how to teach. In fact, there's usually a page in the beginning that says to the teacher, and it tells you something about how to teach. But make sure you read that. Spelling tests. There's in the Christian Light Language Arts, there's a list in the back for spelling words with sentences that go with the words, so you don't have to come up with those on your own. And along with that, I would add, if you don't know how to pronounce the spelling words, write that in at the beginning of the year. First couple times I taught spelling words and gave out spelling words, I really struggled with saying the words correctly. And it helped just to write the phonetic spelling in there to be able to get it right, because otherwise your students might laugh at you, which they probably will anyway sometime, but at least maybe not as often this way. So make sure you can pronounce the words correctly. Seventh thing in preparation is know your schedule. Teaching is a very demanding life. Don't get me wrong. It's very fulfilling as well. But you don't have time to do everything. So you have to carefully budget your time. Have a time for getting out of bed in the morning. Have a time that you arrive at school. And make sure you set a time that you go home as well. Don't try to... Hopefully you're not putting in 14-hour days every day. Sometimes that might be necessary when you're doing report cards or getting ready for PTA, but set a time to go home. And, if you're not getting everything done, maybe you just need to talk to the school board. Make sure you go to bed on time. Teachers need sleep. You're not Superman or Superwoman. You have to get your sleep. If you don't get your sleep, it will show up in school. And you'll quickly notice which students are not getting their sleep at night as well. It's very easy to see when students aren't getting their sleep. Be careful with other commitments. Teachers are often signed up for song leader or Sunday school teacher or summer Bible school or a lot of other things. Just be careful. Remember, you were hired to teach, first of all. And some of these other things, they may be good and great, but they're not as important as what you were first asked to do. So be careful about committing to too many things. Know your schedule and your school life. And this is very important. Get a copy of last year's schedule. Hopefully someone has a schedule like this where you can look and see how they did their the subjects, what time of day they did each subject and how many times a week they did it, science, history. This is just a schedule I've used for myself. It can be extremely helpful to start off with this. If you try to make up your own from scratch, it can take a long time. Find a copy of last year's schedule. I know what I would take it and I would laminate it and put it on the students' desks where it was right there where they could all see it. They know what's going to happen next. They don't have to wonder what's going to happen. Remember one year I didn't get that done, and one student, and he was the last student I would have thought that would have liked schedules even, but he wanted a schedule on his desk. They want that. They want things to be orderly and planned. Ask the school board for a school calendar, or make one yourself, but make sure you get their approval first. Plan games and recess times. It's good to plan things out. And one year we had a chart on the out there, and we just put down on the calendar for the whole month, planned out what games we play each day. We were having some trouble with the students picking games because it seemed like they always picked the same game. And so we just did this on the calendar where we put a game down and tried to evenly spread everything out. That was actually worked out fairly well. And you know, students, sometimes we think maybe they want to choose a game, and that's okay if they do, but sometimes they really don't want to choose a game. They just, because they end up being pressured to choose the game that everyone else wants to play. So you can plan some of that out. That's just a great thing to do. Again, these are just ideas. You don't have to do all of them. Another thing would be a list of school supplies for your students. Make a list of school supplies for students. And even another thing you could do to get to know your students would be to make a trip to their home and give them the list personally. Give them the list and say this is what they need. And just say hi to them. If you have time to do that, that would be a great way of connecting with the student ahead of time. The eighth thing in preparation is prepare your records. Where are you going to record their grades? Make sure you have a grade book. Well, you need a student permanent record. It's another thing. Write their names on that. Get that ready. If you use the ones from Christian Light, there'll be a place to write their name at the beginning, and then you put the book they started in each subject. Write that down. You may need to check the last year's records to see what books they finished and where they need to start that year. Find out where the file cabinet is, and make sure you have your tests and quizzes stored there where you can find them. And that can save a lot of time. Fourthly is achievement tests. Do y'all do achievement tests every year? Or is it going to be every other year? It might be something you have to ask the school board. Make sure if they are supposed to do them, and make sure they're there, ready. Okay, prepare your classroom. In the first days of school, Harry Wong says, a cluttered or barren room sends a negative message to your pupils, and a well-organized room gives an in-control image that students respect. So make sure your room is well-orderly. But it says, do not over-arrange or over-decorate your room for the opening of school. Your room should be neat and pleasant, but don't spend time making it the ultimate room you want by back-to-school night. And this is probably maybe a problem that girls sometimes have, maybe more than boys, is they like to have everything decorated out, and I walk in these classrooms like, wow, whew, this took a lot of time. And there's nothing wrong with that, but don't put it in front of some of the more important things like getting the books ready and things like that. And along with that, with your decorations, make sure that there's Bible verses. Make sure they know that it is a Christian classroom and not just any classroom. Make sure, prepare your classroom. Then the tenth thing is prepare to teach. Prepare the first day. So what you do on the first day, and it's Wong says this, what you do on the first days of school will determine your success or failure for the rest of the school year. Show them that this is where there's order and purpose and where learning is exciting. Make sure you show them that the first day. And usually when students come to school, they're excited about the first day. It's just contagious. And if you can take that and build on that and get a good start, it'll make a huge difference to how the rest of the year goes as well. Write out a welcome speech for that first time you stand in front of the students. Write out what you're going to say exactly. Establish procedures and routines from the very first day. And hopefully Verlin will give us more details on that tomorrow. And maybe you think, we'll give the students grace the first week, and I think our teacher did that some. Where, you know, if we talk without permission, he didn't necessarily punish us, but he did say, remember to raise your hand. Maybe give reminders, but work on establishing those procedures and routines from the very beginning. How we dismiss, different things like that. Don't need to punish them if they don't obey a routine, but don't just ignore it the first week. Make sure you establish clear procedures and routines the first week, and then it'll help everything else go much smoother. It doesn't make it easier to wait till the second or third week. Your teacher planner. You should have a teacher planner with lesson plans. Make sure you plan it out at least the first 2 weeks. What subjects will be which days? And plan exactly what they'll be assigned each day. Make sure you assign enough work, because they often come with lots of enthusiasm. They can get lots of work done the first day of school. You don't really want them to be finished by first break, and not have anything else planned for the rest of the day. And they do sometimes do that, or at least finish by lunch. Be flexible. Prepare your science supplies. Make sure you look through the textbooks and decide what experiments or activities you're going to do. And no, you can't do them all, but pick some and have the supplies ready so you don't need to overnight them from UPS or from Amazon or something. Have your Bible memory ready. It's another thing you can prepare. I like to use a Bible program to copy the verses onto a piece of paper and then divide it into assignments for the whole year. If you have 34 weeks of school, you can divide it up into maybe 30 sections and have some weeks for review, or maybe some weeks you won't have Bible memory because of program practice or field trip or other things like that. Plan your Christmas or Easter program. And those are things you can start if you choose the songs now in the summer. You can start singing them right away when you start going to school, when school starts, and it can help the students be ready for the program. Plan out some motivational projects for the year. And this is not something that's very, very important, but I think it's good to have them. You don't want to have them all the time, but maybe once a year or twice a year is great to have. Make sure you, in a motivational project, make sure that's a team effort and a team reward. Don't just reward the ones that get 95% or higher, because maybe there are some that can't get a 95% or higher. So make sure each student is motivated to improve. Don't just reward the ones that school is easy for. And I would like to say along with that, make sure you work on motivating those really smart students as much as you work on the slow students to improve. Make sure you work on the ones that school comes easier, make them work just as hard. Or maybe there's extracurricular ideas that you have, like maybe there's a science fair or special days like 100th day or different things like that. If you plan those out at the beginning of the year, it makes it a lot easier, because when it comes to February, especially the first year of teaching, and it's just like there's so much on your mind, you don't have time to plan something like that. If you could have it kind of planned out ahead of time, that can help you when the time comes for something. Again, there's nothing wrong with coming up with these ideas during the school year, but just so often you get so busy, it's hard to find inspiration. And if you have it ready ahead of time, you can do it. Okay, moving on to the daily lesson preparation. Law 1 and the 7 laws of teaching is the teacher must know that which he would teach. And how many of y'all like bananas? Okay, most people like bananas, but how many of y'all would be willing to take a bite out of this banana without doing anything to it? It would not be very tasty. It's not because bananas aren't good, it's simply because we failed to prepare it for eating. And that can be the same way for your students. When we just hand them the lesson without any preparation, it's like giving them a bite of a banana that has not been peeled. And it won't taste very good for them. But if we can kind of unpackage that for them to where they can get an actual taste of that, it makes it taste so much better with a little bit of preparation. So how do we prepare for a lesson, for the daily lesson? You come into school and you open the teacher's guides, open the books. How do you prepare for that? So first of all, I would study the objectives. Know what you're going to teach that day. What do they have to learn by the end of this lesson? What am I trying to tell them? And plan the review. Make sure you decide when you're going to do the review, at the beginning or at the end. And with Christian Light, that's more figured into the lessons. Rod and staff doesn't have as much built in. You might need to do more in class. 3, do it the day before. So if you can, in the evening before you leave school, look over the lessons for the next day, what you're going to be teaching. It's safer schedule-wise. If you plan to do it in the morning and then the iced coffee spills or you don't wake up in time, then you might be in trouble. So it's also nice if you see something that you're going to need for the next day, then you can go home and get it and have it ready for the next day, or make sure that it's available there at school. And also it gives it time to soak in. Sometimes we need a little bit of time for this information to soak in and we'll have it better. Make sure you do a few problems yourself. Oftentimes there's things that happen that come up when we're doing a problem we didn't think about. And if we can spot some of those places where a student might struggle, we can prevent a lot of problems later on by doing a few problems ourselves. And lastly, study the lesson until you're excited. You won't have enough time to do justice to every subject. If you study each subject and just keep studying until you think you have studied it long enough or until you have studied it well enough, sometimes you don't have time to do that. Study until you're excited. It is more important to prepare for the next day's lessons than to check today's lessons. And Jonathan was talking about that this morning a bit. It's more important to study for the next day's lessons than to check today's lessons. So sometimes you might just have to skip the checking, or maybe have someone else check, or maybe have your students help you checking other people's work. There's always more preparation that could be done, more studying that could be done. So just study until you're excited. All right, in conclusion, teaching is a skill that requires lots of effort, planning, and preparation. Would you want to jump into 10 feet of water without any flotation device? Sure you would, especially if you had never swum before. Please don't jump into the classroom without preparing. It's not the type of thing we can just... Maybe you can jump in, but the results probably won't be pretty. Again, but just like swimming, you can't learn how to swim by simply listening to somebody tell you how to swim. So you can't learn how to teach, sorry to disappoint you, by simply us telling you how to do it. You do have to jump in. They help you prepare, but there is a time when you have to simply jump in. Even elephants, they don't always keep their heads above water. They use their trunk as a snorkel to reach out and breathe even when they're underwater. And so, in a sense, you could say prayer is our underwater breathing apparatus. We can breathe even if we're underwater, if we have that connection to God through prayer. And maybe you'll discover, as I have, that teaching, like swimming underwater, can actually be a thrilling experience. Remember, the takeaway for this class is the three most important words to a painter, pilot, or chef are preparation, preparation, preparation. The three most important words to a teacher are
preparation, preparation,
preparation. That's right. God blesses you. Prepare to teach.